Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome in to Cody and Gold.
Are you ready?
You are clear to engage.
Showtime!
On 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
1-800-GOT-JUNK can get your stuff out in every which way by the end of May. It's the only way. Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK now.
Here's Cody Tapp and Alex Gold.
Oh, he's going to force it into our
brains. That one's kind of catchy.
I just wanted to hear it again. That's my favorite one.
That was the one yesterday Dusty and I thought was the worst.
That one was really catchy. It gets stuck in my head.
The ping in the background is annoying.
It's just the
ping.
Now.
Well, that's what's funny about it, yeah. The second one, again, we've got more, right? You've got new ones first.
Three.
And the one, three new
ones.
Okay.
Three.
Two new
three.
Ones.
I think it's three, but they're in there.
Coming up in the 1 o'clock hour today, we will talk some more Royals baseball here in just a little bit and what role should exist for Jacob Junis. We know he's in the bullpen, but were you okay with him being in the high leverage situation? Should he be the guy that comes in when you need three innings? How are they going to go with that going forward? We'll get to that in just a little bit. The Chiefs had two picks, though, in round two. We know Nick Bolton, the linebacker out of Missouri, and Creed Humphrey, the center out of Oklahoma. Who potentially could have the bigger impact, though, here in 2021? Pete Sweeney, our Chiefs insider from Arrowhead Pride, he was on with Fesco in the morning. They asked him that question.
Well, you look at the linebacker room, and Nick Bolton, I think, jumps out just because of the numbers game there. But we felt the same way about Willie Gay last year, and it seemed like last year, again, was more of a developmental year for Willie Gay, and they're going to be eyeing him this year to really get a little bit more involved. And so I look one pick later to Creed Humphrey, and you think about who they had in place before that, where Austin Blythe was in here. Don't forget, Austin Ryder is no longer with the team. Austin Blythe from the Rams is in here. They were talking about Nick Allegretti potentially playing center. They even floated Joe Tooney over. And then one thing Brett Veach said after Creed Humphrey joined the team is now we don't have to worry about moving Joe Tooney from left guard. And so that to me tells you, okay, this guy has a real potential to start at center immediately. They did it with Mitch Morse a few years back, and that worked out really well. And what they kept on saying this year about Creed is the idea that this is a bigger body. They really bolstered these big-bodied offensive linemen. They don't want a soul to touch Patrick Mahomes this year. And I think Humphrey already, it's seeming like they feel that he would be the best option at center.
Yeah, Creed Humphrey, 6'5", 320 is what he weighed at college, for example. And look, Austin Ryder was fine, but Austin Ryder was 6'3", and he wasn't 320. So it's a bigger body potential.
Sure.
I agree with Pete on who has the bigger impact. I think it absolutely is going to be Creed Humphrey. And I am also happy to hear that they don't have to worry about moving Joe Tooney over to center. Let him play his natural position.
Yeah, I never liked that idea.
And be left guard. That left side of the line you feel great about. Austin Blythe's on a one-year nothing contract. Okay, like there's nothing that you're like, oh man, this guy, they signed him. He's got to be the starter. There's nothing there. Now, maybe there's a scenario where Austin Blythe starts week one, but Creed Humphrey was a second round draft pick. A center drafted in the second round is someone you're probably expecting. And frankly, I would say better be starting fairly early on in his career if you're going to spend a second round pick on it. I was good with the pick because I think you now have stability long term at the center position ultimately. But Creed Humphrey, I think, plays more games, more snaps next year by far, and therefore a bigger impact helping that offensive line continue to improve than Nick Bolton.
Funny, it's like it depends on the position. Because if I said Nick Bolton better damn well start week one, he's a second round pick. He was picked higher than Creed Humphreys was.
Yeah, the argument I would say on that would just be that Your other option is Austin Blythe, who's on a one-year deal.
Who ranked as the ninth best center last
year. Yeah, but Austin Blythe's on a one-year deal and has never played for the organization. Whereas, like, at linebacker, you've got, you know, Anthony Hitchens still that's obviously done some good things. I know we talked about Ben Neiman.
Yeah, but he wasn't
the
ninth best linebacker. Do you see?
No, but you can't. Yeah, you're right about it. It's a different position. It's absolutely a different position. And, like, they're revamping the offensive line. They're going to have five new starters on the offensive line. There is a reason for that. I just think it's more likely that there's already moving parts there. The offensive line needed an overhaul. They overhauled it. And so I don't think they would be, leery of starting a rookie at center. I don't
think they would be either, which is probably why it should be Creed Humphrey. I feel like it should be Nick Bolton based on the investment they've made at that position. And traditionally speaking, I would say linebacker is a more impactful position. This to me is where I will say that I think it's Bolton. I'm going to be an optimist and say that they were correct in identifying the right talent at linebacker in Nick Bolton, and that he is automatically just going to play a little bit more than maybe Willie Gay did last year. Maybe not full-blown starter. Not, like I said, the linebackers in their group, none of them play that much. Anthony Hitchens played the most, about 55% of the defensive snaps, versus three safeties that all played more than 75%. So just based on their defense, there is some limited opportunity at that position. But I'll take Bolton, because I think even if Creed Humphrey is a regular starter, it's going to be harder to, like, some of it is going to be harder to feel his impact. And I think if he has success, some of that won't be so much, some of it will be his success, but some of it will be, they put him in a perfect position.
That's great.
They put him right next to all-pro left guard in Joe Tooney. They helped him on the left side, because now they've got Orlando Brown at left tackle. And they're not shabby, I don't think, at right tackle or right guard. So I don't know that his impact will be, I don't know that there'd be a big difference between Blythe or Humphrey starting this year.
Maybe not.
Which is a compliment to Humphrey, but it's also like, I don't know that there'd be a big difference between starting either of those guys this year. So his impact isn't the same for me. I do think Bolton can be an upgrade to the linebacker room. The question is how they use him.
For that scenario to play out for you with Nick Bolton, I think it is, we know they played a lot of three safeties, as you mentioned, with the playing time and all that.
Sure.
What's to say, though, if they feel better about the linebacking core, that we actually do see more of true linebackers on the field versus where they kind of brought Sorensen, down and he played, or Dorian O'Daniel, whatever. Like, I just wonder, was that because truly the personnel they had, they felt like that was the best that they could put out there? Do they feel like they've truly been able to upgrade? Does Nick Bolton give them some flexibility? I know Bolton and they've talked about Bolton and Willie Gay, and they can play different linebacker positions. I get it, but That would be my only question for the snaps to be higher for Bolton this year and for Willie Gay also to still be impactful. Do we see some more opportunities where they have more linebackers on the field than they had this past season? I think there's a chance of that. We'll see. I think there's a chance of that depending on how they feel Daniel Sorensen is he still playing at a high enough level?
Well, and how much teams pass against him. That's, part of the reason they don't use linebackers is because they put people in four wide all the time because they score 40. So other teams feel like they have to score 40. So, like, that again, that all comes back to why, like, I didn't value linebacker specifically for this team nearly as much, and why I was reticent about a yet another second round pick at that position, because I'm just not sure for this team it makes as much sense. But I do think he has a chance to be more impactful, because I think Blythe could start week one, and I don't know that there's a big difference probably in the production you're going to get out of either side of those guys just because of how much work they've done at the other parts of the offensive line, which is a compliment to what Kansas City's done in the offensive line overall. But Blythe was not a scrub last year. He wasn't Allegretti at center. Like, it's not like, here, let's just put some dude there. Like, and I am glad they signed Humphreys, because it's going to keep them from making the bad decision, which would have been, let's take the guy who was a Pro Bowl, maybe all pro at left guard last year and move him around. Like, no. That's the same as like Quentin Nelson. I wouldn't move Quentin Nelson around either. If he isn't all pro at his position, leave him there.
And they do have so much flexibility now on the offensive line, because if there are injuries, and it's likely at some point someone's going to miss a game on the offensive line, they really do have three, four plus guys that can play two or three positions on the old line. I mean, that suddenly the offensive line is very deep. I was listening to Binkley yesterday. He was on, I think he hopped on the drive briefly yesterday, and they were talking about Nick Bolton and Willie Gay. And Bink thinks Nick Bolton can end up being better than Willie Gay does. Now, Willie Gay, small sample size, 1 year, some injuries, not a full offseason. We obviously haven't seen a single snap from Nick Bolton in the NFL, but he thinks Nick Bolton is actually the better linebacker
prospect
between the two. Yeah.
I mean, he might be. But again, I don't... That, So should I hate the Willie Gay pick right, 2 years ago?
That's like, the problem.
Like,
that's the problem.
Like you drafted him in damn near the same position. What the hell were you taking a linebacker who wasn't as good as the other guy?
A lot's going to be dictated on next season. I know it's like we're not even to this season. But
no,
like
we're not going to know on them
but
for
like
a few
2022
years.
If Hitchens is gone, is it Willie Gay and Nick Bolton leading the linebacker core? And if they're good enough, then you can say, okay, those were both really good picks.
Yeah, if you spend more than $3 million in free agency at the linebacker position in 2 years, I'm going to have a problem. Or if you spend higher than a third round pick again, I'm going to have an issue.
I don't think, I don't think I was looking at, I don't believe Austin Ryder, by the way, going back to center for a second, I don't think he's signed with anybody, has he?
Don't think so.
Is he still out there? I know he's obviously not coming to Kansas City, but just to tell you,
no, they brought
as far
in Blythe, and obviously the numbers didn't add up there. I think Ryder was looking.
He's still a free agent.
I think he was looking for a multi year deal.
Well,
so.
Obviously, that's not happening.
No. I don't think almost anybody remaining in the free agent pool. Do you think any of them are getting, like after Villanueva, maybe
Leno, yeah.
But after Villanueva got a 2 year deal, out of the free agents who were there from the beginning, I'm having a hard time seeing the gap. Like I don't see that many. There's no wide receivers. Like there aren't that many corner. Like I guess I don't see a corner. I don't think Casey Hayward's getting a 2 year deal unless it's like a paper 2 year deal.
He reportedly signed with the Raiders, but I'm assuming.
Oh yeah, that's.
But
right.
I'm with you. I doubt it's more than a 1 year deal. Over there, when we talk about some, like, I guess I don't think Melvin Ingram would as an edge rusher. I think it's more likely an edge rusher.
I think he probably wants a 2 year deal too.
I think an edge rusher is more likely to get a 2 year deal, but with some guarantee. But yeah, the longer you're out there, your leverage of like, well, clearly the interest isn't there.
And honestly, it's not worth it. Why sign a multi year deal when the number is going to go up next year?
Don't need, yeah, for the player as well. Yeah, no question. Absolutely. Hey, we'll talk some more Chiefs coming up in about 15 minutes or so in the Chiefs Red half hour, but with the Royals in the bullpen, we talked to start the show about the struggles, and it has been a struggle for this bullpen, and certainly, yes, injuries have played a role, but yesterday was another example of the bullpen with its own struggles. Jacob Junis, it was bad timing 2 nights ago. He gets moved from the rotation after being so good. He gets moved to the bullpen, unfortunately, for one night, right? It looked like a bad move for one night. It's one night, but going forward, maybe we see him again tonight. Who knows? What should his role be in the bullpen? We know he's in the bullpen. Maybe down the road he's a starter again. Who knows? But we know he's in the bullpen. Should he be what we saw 2 nights ago, which was he was going to give you a couple of innings, or should he be just a guy that's a high leverage situation in the seventh or eighth inning, knowing now that seems like your options for guys you trust in high leverage situations, that list is getting really, really minimal at this point.
Let us know over in the Jay Southland Toast Service text line, 913-576-7610. I'm torn. I would like to see him in high leverage. High leverage doesn't typically mean multiple innings, which means it's more difficult to move him back into the rotation if you need him to. See, so, and do I want to go through a three-star run-up again on Jacob Junis if he has to go back into the rotation? Injury, some guy's not performing, whatever it's going to be. So I feel like he needs to be in middle relief. For the value there later, I really am torn. Honestly, if I knew he wasn't going to be in the rotation, I'd like to see him in the seventh or eighth inning guy. I think he has that kind of stuff. I think he could bring the fastball up. And I think he's pitched with enough leverage in his life that he could pitch high leverage in the back end of a bullpen. But if I do that, I limit his innings to the point that I have to run up again as a starter. And I don't know how many times you can do that in a year and feel really good that you're not overexposing the bullpen, which was already, you know, a problem a little bit for this team.
Yeah, I mean, it's... He can go multiple innings, let's say sixth, seventh inning in some cases. He's not going to be what Irvin Santana has been. I hope not, right? Which is Santana's kind of there when things are out of reach and you just need someone to eat you some innings. Like that's not best utilizing Jacob Junis' abilities and how dominant he, I think, can be eventually once he gets settled back into the bullpen. So it's not that. But yeah, I think, I mean, remember the plan even just a few days ago, it seemed like most people understood and the expectation was, okay, now that Jacob Junis is in the bullpen, he's probably a guy that's going to at times pitch you multiple innings when there's the heart, you know, the heart of the order, the most difficult part of the lineup up for the opponent. Now, again, it backfired a couple nights ago, but I still think that's the role to use him in. Sixth and seventh inning, maybe it's the top of the order is coming up in the seventh, so you have him come out in the sixth as well for the bottom of the order, let him finish in the top of the seventh with the top of the order, and then that's his night. And he gives you six outs, and he faces the top of the order or the heart of the order, and that's his role. I think that's more like sixth, seventh inning, usually clean innings, by the way, for him, I would prefer. I don't know if I would necessarily want him coming in a lot of situations where it's, you know, the top of the sixth and there's two men on and nobody out.
I don't think I need to see him there yet. No.
Yeah, I don't. Although right now, who do you trust in that scenario right now?
The answer is Barlow. Yeah. He has established that role. Or Stama, right? He actually came in for an extra out in that game last night, too. It did not go well the following inning. Like, most guys do better in a clean inning. There's very few guys where you're going to be like, oh, yeah, it's great. And by the way, the answer to who can get you out of a jam in one inning, it's a lot of different guys if it's one out. If it's the right guy who struggles with curveballs and it's Zuber, then throw in Zuber,
sure.
Right?
No, I get that. Yeah.
Like, there is a bit of a strategy to that end. But it's with Junis, it's like, I want to see him in high leverage. Because honestly, he's under contract for two more years after this one, too. And that might be the long-term play for him. They're already moving him out of their rotation. And there are some statistics to suggest. Remember, we went back to, is this the right decision? Which is a question we can continue to ask ourselves. You could say, well, based on the way Lynch's start went, which wasn't great or anything, no, it wasn't the right decision. It's not like Junis was good in the bullpen. Would he have been better as a starter? But there were some statistics that proved that, you know, Junis was starting to get hit harder. So if you want to deep dive into stuff, there might have been a reason why you were being preemptive about why you had pulled Jacob Junis from the rotation and instead using him in that flex role. I think they just thought the bullpen was going to be better and the starters are going to be better. But for the bullpen to be better, it can't be Jacob Junis' pitches three innings when they're down six. It's got to be Jacob Junis' pitches high leverage, so I lean towards that.
Yeah, I'm not going to – what happened two nights ago, I'm not going to say, oh, man, that's – let's see. Ultimately, we'll know in a week or so or more what that decision that was made to move him to the bullpen ultimately is long-term the right decision or not. I mean, I just think, you know, right now the team as a whole is just not playing very good baseball.
No.
So it's hard for anybody to look great. But this is where – questions to, you know, sustainability of things. Can Brady Singer give you a strong outing tonight against the Cy Young Award winner and Shane Bieber? Tomorrow, can Danny Duffy keep his unbelievable, he's not going to keep the 0.61 ERA up long term, okay? But can he continue to give you really, really solid outings? Looks like a completely different pitcher out there. They need it badly this week because this team is in a little bit of a funk right now, and they have lost three in a row, and it's unfortunately coming against a divisional opponent this go around, and the Cleveland Indians. Well, Vern is going to join us coming up at 12:30, our Royals Insider. We'll talk to him more about that exact question about Junis, how he should be used, and also what his biggest concern is right now, and is, you know, more likely they can fix this bullpen, or is it the defense? It's as simple as Adalberto Modesty coming back. So we'll talk more about that with Vern in just a bit. We know the NFL draft was last week. It was last Thursday, and the second overall pick was Zach Wilson, the quarterback out of BYU. Everybody's very high on him. The Jets had actually a pretty good draft, to say the least, not just with him, but what they ultimately would do throughout. And so as the draft was going on, and then through the weekend, as you know, like someone sees video of a family member, whatever, and all of a sudden it goes viral. In this case, it was Zach Wilson's mom, okay? Zach Wilson looks like a very attractive lady. That became a huge story and trending topic, as a matter of fact, around the draft. In fact, it was on the front page of the New York Post. That was part of the story along with Zach Wilson getting drafted. They wrote a little story about Zach Wilson's mom and how people were freaking out about her being shown throughout the draft coverage.
Sure.
So then Craig Carton, who is a radio host at WFAN, obviously one of the more polarizing radio hosts for a wide variety of reasons, including being in federal prison for a little bit of time. And now he's back,
back in the working world.
WFAN up in New York. And this was what he asked Zach Wilson when he came on his show following being drafted.
I check out the newspapers, right? When I wake up this morning, I go online. Let me just see what other people are saying about my guy. You know, and the headline of the Post is Zachpot. I'm like, all right, I like that. Not bad. The lead story, though, is not about Zach Wilson becoming the New York Jet quarterback. Your mom has become the lead story here. And I say that respectfully because people are like, the star of the first round of the draft is Mrs. Wilson because she's a very attractive woman. And I'm just wondering how awkward that is for you that you just got picked second overall in the draft and the focus is, wow, his mom is really hot. I assume you've dealt with it your whole life, but now it's playing out on Broadway. How awkward was that for you?
Yeah, it's not my favorite for sure. We like to keep her out of the spotlight, but she's an awesome lady, and I love having her support.
No doubt. No doubt. I respect that. I had to bring it up because it is on the front page of the papers today.
So he asked that. He took a lot of heat for it. People have said he was wrong for asking the question, all that. And he today or yesterday went on his show and defended himself, obviously, for asking the question. And in his defense, he did what he said was, I didn't say like, hey, your mom's hot, and then just start asking the question. No, he didn't do that.
We have a Chiefs draft pick coming up at 11:45. Should we ask Noah Gray if his mom's hot?
I don't think we should do that. No. Noah Gray is going to join us. Chiefs tight end, which is drafted out of Duke. He's coming up at 11:45.
I'm on it.
Oh boy. Let us know. But no, like, I don't think I'll
be asking it.
I don't have an issue with what Craig Carden did, though. I really don't. In that particular instance, I don't.
Why not just avoid it?
It's New York. He's a polar. It's New York. It was on the cover of New York Post and everything. The way he asked it, actually, I didn't have a problem with the way he asked it. No. Now Zach Wilson, you could clearly tell, was not interested. Didn't laugh it off or anything. Was not very interested in having it. I didn't have an issue with what Craig Carden did in that scenario.
I just wouldn't bring it up.
He didn't just like find a photo and he on his own did it.
It was
the topic of conversation in New York. Think about that for a second.
He asked it, you know? Like,
he didn't say, no.
Is that awkward for you that your mom's hot? That's kind of what it sounded like.
How else would you have asked it, though? He didn't say, like, look, I was looking and your mom was very attractive. Like, he didn't say that. That would be way out of line. He's like, look, the story here, she's on the front page. The story hasn't been as much about you as it's been about your mom. Is that awkward for you? I don't have an issue with how he asked it.
I mean, I guess I should have looked up.
It's New York City, too. Like, it's just a different. Maybe you don't ask that if it's in Kansas City or Indianapolis or wherever. It's in New York. I don't have a problem with it.
The different city changes it?
Absolutely. You know this. Radio's different in New York City than it is in Kansas City.
It is. That's why I always get confused anytime like somebody gets mad about a question I ask in a press conference here. I'm like, yeah. Andy, you were in Philadelphia. Like, you know what it's like to be asked 78 tough questions in a row? If I ask one, you'll be all right. But that's, you know, that's just markets are different based on that. But damn, he's going to come out and ask the guy, is it awkward for you that people keep talking about your mom's hotness instead of you?
I mean, yeah, Zach Wilson, I don't know how else you would answer that question than how he did. He answered it very well. Like, yeah, we don't really like that. We try to keep her.
It's not my favorite thing. And by the way, if his mom is hot, then he's probably heard this quite a bit in his life.
Yes.
She is.
Yeah, she's very attractive.
So. It's not like this is the first time for him.
Every person that guy's ever been friends with has made a joke about it.
Yes. 1,000%. And now he's going to do it in a national radio interview, essentially. Well, not national, but a major city radio interview.
Some people were critical of Craig Carden for asking that question to Zach Wilson, the starting quarterback of the New York Jets. Coming up next, Serta's got his fantasy flash. Then we'll get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. We'll talk about how the Chiefs approach the offseason and what one national pundit said about how that maybe sets up the future for KC this year.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Chiefs Red Half Hour, every day at 11:30 on Cody and Gold.
It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. We're 15 minutes away from talking to one of the newest members of the Kansas City Chiefs, the Chiefs' fifth-round draft pick, rookie tight end Noah Gray out of Duke. He's going to call into the show here in about 15 minutes or so. Also at 12:05, your next chance at a $30 Kansas Lottery Sweet Escape prize pack, and you can have a chance to qualify for your own sweet staycation with an evening stay at the Hotel Indigo, Kansas City downtown, including dinner for two, and a pair of tickets to catch our boys in blue take on Boston on June the 20th. So that's coming up at 12:05. So Robert Mays who we've had on the show before, and I believe we actually met him out in Miami a couple years ago at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, we were drinking it like a frozen drink bar of all places is where we were
near the
it
beach.
With Robert Mays.
That was nice. Yeah. Very expensive, overpriced drinks, but the beach That's was there, way. So you're like, okay, doesn't matter. You don't care what the price of the drink is.
And it was also like
we
were sitting on like a patio in South Beach at night. It's fine. I was okay with whatever we were doing there.
Those were good times. Those were good times. So Robert Mays of the Ringer, the Athletic now. He was at the Ringer at the time, I believe.
He was.
Now he's at the Athletic.
In fairness, when you were talking about Miami, he was there, but now he's...
He wrote a piece about each team and the draft class and says, hey, this draft class, it can tell you about how the franchise views their future a whole lot. Makes a lot of sense. But what did he say about the Chiefs? He says the Chiefs offseason tells us the only thing the Chiefs thought was a functional offensive line will win them a championship. And he kind of simplified it in that way. He said, hey, look, they believe they can be a championship team if they just had a functional offensive line. That's kind of what we all thought. As we're watching the Super Bowl, did we not? They made it to the Super Bowl with an offensive line that was banged up. Ultimately, they had at least one injury too many, ran into the wrong team at the wrong time with the pass rush, and we know the result of the Super Bowl this past February. I mean, I think that is clearly what the Chiefs have sent message-wise. Other than if you want to say, well, they were flirting with Juju Smith-Schuster, maybe they still felt like they needed some wide receiver help as well after they lost Sammy Watkins, but...
They didn't pursue it that hard.
No.
And remember how... Veach made that sound.
Yeah, so it was clear. Like they felt like, no, we've got all the pieces still. There's other, you know, acquisitions we can make, but yeah, we can be back in the Super Bowl and win another championship if we fix this offensive line problem that we had last season.
I think this is actually a correct identification because he did this about multiple teams, right? And I think he's right about your Cleveland Browns as well, too, Serta, by the way. But that is the only thing that stands in their way. What other area isn't good enough to win a Super Bowl? And by the way, if every other area is good enough to win a Super Bowl and you have Patrick Mahomes, you got as good of a shot, better shot, actually, than anybody else in the rest of the NFL. And that includes the defending Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You have a better shot than them. And they were turning everybody. But you have Patrick Mahomes and your only glaring weakness on your team, you completely overhauled in a single offseason. You added multiple Pro Bowlers. You added starters across the entire thing, and you added depth. Like, to me, they made it obvious. They drafted a center. They drafted another guard late. They traded their first-round pick versus take-a-pick for an experienced left tackle in Orlando Brown, who they intend to probably sign to an extension at some point. Everything they've done this offseason has pointed to one thing. Fix the offensive line, and we're going to win a Super Bowl. And I think that's how they feel. By the way, they're out of the Browns, Serta, as much as you talk about their offensive talent, Robert May's take on them as far as their competition for Kansas City was, the Browns know a deep, versatile defense is their ticket to contention.
I've been telling you about their defense for weeks.
Not through Baker Mayfield. Not through Baker Mayfield.
Not only did they make their secondary one of the best secondaries in the NFL, they also drafted well on defense.
Well, they had a very good draft. It's a good offseason, and it's going to be a very interesting AFC North.
They're going to have the best top to bottom roster in the NFL.
Are you sure about the defense though? Because they are legitimately going to have seven new starters on defense. That's a lot of new players on defense.
But last year, Denzel Ward's a star cornerback, and he was hurt all last year. Greedy Williams, they don't even know what they have in Greedy Williams. He's barely played his first 2 years in the league.
Another reason why I would not feel particularly good about the health.
Gotta
of the
see,
Browns,
gotta but. See him well, actually
brought,
on the field.
Two corners.
They did, and they drafted one right. So. Yeah. They've done more than enough to try to compete on that end. I think that is a correct evaluation. I think every team, and at least the Browns, I'll give them a lot of credit in relation to the Chiefs. Because at least in my mind, Goal, the Browns weren't just being reactive to the Chiefs. That's what we've seen the Ravens do was a bad idea. I've actually seen the Bills do that a couple times. It's not the right idea. The Browns have legitimately just tried to be a better team. They're not being reactive and they're like, here's the things we need to beat the Chiefs. They seem to me to just be building a team to try to be good. Their problem is they have Baker Mayfield and the Kansas City Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes. Like, that's their inevitable
Chad
issue.
Henney.
No, they could not be Chad Henne. No chance, right, to be
and
Chad
And suddenly
Henne.
I'm supposed to think they're a legit Super Bowl contender.
I'm not taking them that far either. I just think in relation to what Kansas City, like, I think they're the two teams that had the best offseason in the AFC. Because the Chiefs were already the best team. And the only way to beat them, they just seemingly fixed. So unless an injury creeps up a new problem on this team or someone's performance dramatically declines from where it has been in the previous years, like all of a sudden Travis Kelce's only a 700-yard tight end, which I don't think is going to happen, they, like, the only team who at least seemingly had as good of an offseason as them, in my mind, is the Browns. I can't believe I'm saying that. I just feel like I'm like,
it's a good offseason. My issue, it's been a great offseason. The issue I have, I still have to see it. Like last year, one thing that's holding up for me is, yes, Baker Mayfield, but also,
but a completely brand new defense, essentially.
Were a week 17 game where the Steelers actually tried to win, if they would have, from not even making the playoffs. And I understand they went and kicked the Steelers' ass the next week in the playoffs. That says more about the Steelers than it did the Browns to me. Like, that's my issue. They weren't a team that ran away with their division last year. They were a fringe playoff team a year ago, and suddenly I'm supposed to believe that they're going to surpass the Chiefs and go to the Super Bowl? I just can't do it. I might be singing a different tune, and Serta may look like a genius by week six when the Browns are 6-0 and everything like that. Maybe that's the case. But even then, if the Chiefs are 5-1 or 6-0, like, they still can they get past Kansas City?
No.
Dark the Horse MVP, Baker Mayfield.
Do again, not you're say
going,
Baker Mayfield.
Look, I will say, if you're going to Vegas, which you are, in June, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I hope you're putting some money on the Browns.
With all the talk about the Browns, yeah, you definitely have to make the bet if you're with the way you're talking about the Browns. Like, it seems like free money for you.
Like, yeah. Do quarterbacks
really good?
Do quarterbacks in the same system ever just make some, like, massive leap in year four?
Josh Allen.
Oh, yeah. But that's
just
like,
last year. Just last year.
Hold on. The guy last year in the MVP conversation.
Hold on. In fairness, didn't we spend a large majority of the season talking about how that never happens?
Yeah.
You said that.
Yes.
You said this never happens. Well, no one makes this kind of
now,
leap.
No, guys can take big jumps. We've never seen the accuracy that he took.
Baker Mayfield has never thrown for 4,000 yards. He's never. It's the modern NFL. He's never thrown for 4,000 yards.
He had Freddie.
He's never thrown for 30 touchdowns. He's never thrown for less than 14 picks on
either. Yeah, he doesn't need to. He's got Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Next season he will, though. They're going to turn him into Russell Wilson next year.
Okay.
They're going to get inside the five, and instead of running, Baker Mayfield's going to bootleg and throw a touchdown.
Let's dial it back.
Yeah.
We got to reel you in. Anytime I talk good about the Browns, I got to spend the next 10 minutes. I just said they had the second best offseason in the entire AFC, and now I gotta reel you back in.
Which equals best team in the AFC.
Also, by the way, in your defense, the first 3 years of Russell Wilson do look a lot like the first 3 years of Baker Mayfield. I'm not trying to give you juice for your argument. Russell Wilson was significantly better at reducing turnovers than Baker Mayfield has been in his first 3 years. But yeah, yardage wise, I don't think
it's a lock that they win their division.
It's pretty close.
Ravens may not have had a great offseason. It's not a lock that Browns even win their own division. That's the problem. Out of all the teams that are Super Bowl contenders, Browns aren't like the, oh, yeah, for sure. Like the Chiefs, we know the AFC West, the Rodgers thing would make things way more interesting, but the Chiefs are going to win the AFC West. I still will pick them to win the AFC West, even if Rodgers shows up. It just makes it a hell of a lot more interesting and tougher.
It's a lot closer.
Yeah.
I pick them to be like a 12-win team instead of 13 or 14.
This has been my problem, though, about the Super Bowl contender conversation. In the offseason with the teams in the AFC, like to be a Super Bowl contender, I got to feel great about you winning your own division, therefore having a chance at getting a bye, the only bye in the AFC, and then, of course, in the NFC as well. And I feel that way still, of course, about the Chiefs. I don't think anybody can sit here, whether you're a Baltimore fan or a Cleveland Brown fan, and say definitively that you feel like your team's winning your division. Like, if we're being realistic about it, you can't say
Ravens
that.
Ravens had a good offseason, too. Other than the Orlando Browns division, which is terrible.
The same way I can't say 1,000% that the Bills are going to win the AFC East. That's a tougher division. It's the reason why I laugh at the Dolphins or a Super Bowl contender conversation. We talked about that last week. And the AFC South, well, the Texans are crap. The Jags have a rookie quarterback. The Colts and Titans are the only two teams that have any shot at winning the division.
Yeah, and it's probably just going to be the Titans.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what Carson.
Their problem is they lost a bunch of weapons, too. Like, they're down to just A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry.
They drafted who's the wide receiver, though? The Titans drafted a wide receiver, though, that I like, and I can't even think of his name. They lost Jonnu Smith. You're right, the tight end.
And they lost Corey Davis, who had his best season.
I believe they drafted a wide receiver fairly high.
I know, but you know how drafted wide receivers are. Counting on them all in year one, there's like four guys every year who in year one perform at the wide receiver spot, and then everybody else is just like, I don't know.
Did they not
guy.
Draft one?
I don't think they did they take a wide receiver one? High. Maybe they did, but it might have been
not
later.
Yeah, they drafted two. I guess they weren't high picks. So they did draft two wide receivers, but not till the fourth round. So
You know, it's the same as taking
A.J. Brown all day.
Powell. A.J. Brown's going to feast. Look, he's great.
Oh, he's going to get 175 targets.
And also, the Colts are completely banking on the fact that they're just going to, like, fix Carson Wentz. And he looks like, I mean, he looks broken the last time we watched him play football. Like, just a broken shell of a man. So you gotta like reconvince Carson Wentz he's good at football again, which is probably a bit of an offseason challenge.
Fresh start for him. Hey, reminder, we're in about 4 or 5 minutes. Expected to be joined by Chiefs rookie tight end Noah Gray, the Chiefs fifth round draft pick. We'll talk to him, get to know him a little bit as someone that we maybe don't know a whole lot about here, obviously in Kansas City. And I would imagine things maybe have finally settled down a little bit from what I would imagine would be a phone that was jammed all Saturday with people congratulating him. So we'll talk to Noah here in just a little bit. Thinking of the Colts, though, there's a report from Tom Pelissero that perhaps Eric Fisher and the Colts could be a duo heading into the start of this season. The Chiefs left tackle set to visit the Colts later this week.
Chiefs should just sign him.
Why? We just talked about
don't
how
let him
they
go
revamped.
To the Colts.
Oh, you're worried about blocking the Colts? Stop.
Yeah,
stop,
I like this team. And stop, the Broncos, stop. By the way. Who else needs a left tackle? Did the Broncos just lose Juwan James for the season?
Yeah, there's Charles Leno. They can go get Charles Leno. Well, in fact, I would rather Charles Leno sign with the Colts and Eric Fisher with the Broncos, as much as that's like, oh my goodness.
No, I'd much rather go to the Broncos.
Eric Fisher?
Either of them. The Colts are a
Charles Leno is a better player at this point in his career than Eric Fisher.
Absolutely, which is why I'd rather the better player to go to the Broncos, because the Colts are more of a...
Not if Aaron Rodgers is going to the Broncos.
Aaron Rodgers.
No, I don't want that. No.
Look, but I
don't know why you care where Eric Fisher signs anyway at this point, though. Eric Fisher, he's going to miss significant time.
December.
And the Chiefs revamped the O-line. Like, he was an underrated player throughout his Chiefs career, but to say, like, oh my goodness, you're worried where he signs there. What are you worrying about where he signs for?
It's just depth at left tackle. I don't want him going other places.
So he should want to be
he's not
going to
cost anything. Why are we just letting, like, teams get late season edition?
Yeah.
I didn't say that. I'm saying the Chiefs should pay him money.
Why? There's no reason to.
To keep him out of the hands of the opponent.
And if you're him, why on earth would you ever sign that to not play?
I mean, look, it's a depth piece. At that point, he's not going to play until December anyway.
Okay, now it's December. You went from October, November, now he's not playing until December?
It's going to be a long time before he gets in the season. It's not the beginning of the season that Eric Fisher is going to be available. I think he won't be ready till October, November, something like that. Probably November. But the point is,
just keep pushing it back.
You shouldn't let him just go help the opponent if he'll come back to you. Why not make a call? He's gonna be cheap, dude. Cheap, free, practically.
Let the Colts
get a free left tackle for the second half of the season? That's no good.
Before they traded for Orlando Brown, we talked about all the scenarios. Okay, draft a rookie left tackle, maybe go get Villanueva, and then still bring in Eric Fisher. Now you've got your left tackle, the future, and Orlando Brown Jr.
Too.
You drafted
him.
You drafted a. Oh my goodness!
Start him at right tackle.
Now
he can develop.
Now here's Cody, the only person that thinks the Chiefs haven't been aggressive enough on the offensive line this offseason, because they've revamped it, and you still want them to do much. I think they've put enough resources on the O line. They're good.
I want them to like Aaron Rodgers line. I just want Patrick Mahomes to stand back there for like 48 seconds of throwing time.
I think they might have already accomplished that. And I'm not all that worried about the Colts, because I think Carson Wentz this year will be no better than Phillip Rivers was a year ago, which was a playoff team. Great for you.
Like golf clap.
Pretty much.
I mean, that's really all they get for that. Like, you're really worried about an offensive lineman going to the Broncos? They don't even have a quarterback yet. Like, if Rodgers goes there, it doesn't matter who their left tackle is. They're a problem. Like, certainly Aaron Rodgers is better when given protection, but they're a problem no matter who their left tackle is if they get Aaron Rodgers in camp. The one thing I would say is that if the only bright side is if Aaron Rodgers ended up in the division is if he never got past Mahomes, right, which is not a crazy thought, right? Mahomes could still win the division every year. They're still the better team, I think, even if Rodgers is on there. You actually set the rebuild after Rodgers even further back. Like, the Broncos are going to go back into the pit of despair because they will have given up all of those picks and had gone for it that entire time. So there wouldn't have been a bunch of extra money to do it. And they've spent 5 years without the playoffs trying to get out of the pit now. They would be good for a few years, obviously, because they would have Aaron Rodgers.
It's a no-brainer trade for the Broncos if Aaron Rodgers is
I'd still do it if I were the Broncos.
It's a no-brainer.
I'm just saying there could be a light at the end of the road if they weren't able to, like, get their team up to the standard that the Chiefs have set for the last few years.
I mean, like, for those who are like, oh, I just want to see Rodgers and Mahomes go head-to-head. Yeah, we're probably going to get that this year if he plays for the Packers. It's on the schedule. I don't need him in the division. I'm going to get it this year.
Oh, man, if they rob us from Mahomes and Rodgers again, like, they schedule that game week. They're not going to schedule that game week 3 now. You got to schedule it later, don't you? Just in case he sits out for like 5 or 6 weeks and then decides to come back?
Probably.
Because if they schedule for week three and I get robbed from it again, and I got to watch Mahomes Love because Mahomes got hurt before the game the last time, right? No, Rodgers did.
No, that was the one was Mahomes was out. That was with the knee stuff.
I had to watch, you know, Rodgers versus, you know, no-name backup quarterback. That's no fun. I'm going to be really sad if we get robbed of that again. That doesn't mean I'm rooting for him to go to the Broncos. I'm just saying, you know. Like, I'm assertive, at least on that. It felt like a couple years ago
when Aaron Rodgers
was coming to Arrowhead. Let's see the head-to-head.
I want them to play each other at some point. I like to see that matchup, but I don't need it twice a year for the next 4 years to hurt the Chiefs' chances of winning the AFC West.
Yeah, and there's only one number one seed. And if you're in a weak division and you're a good team, you got a better chance to do it. But there are no, like, what is the weakest division to win it? And we know that it's the South, but the South doesn't have a dominant team. Like, do you
not
really
a Super Bowl contender?
Yeah, but it's not a team who's going to take the number one seed away from you, even if you lose an extra game to the Broncos. Now, see, that's the thing. The AFC East is like the Patriots are more competitive now, the Jets are more competitive now, the Dolphins almost made the postseason, and the Bills were in the postseason. So that division's going to get to beat up on each other. We already said the North, right? Got multiple good teams. They can beat up on each other a little bit. So it's like the only division that threatens to like, hey, we're in a bad division, we'll run away with the number one seed like the Patriots used to do year in and year, while the Chiefs have got to slog against tougher opponents in the AFC West is the South, and they don't have a team good enough to make you feel like they're going to do it. Although I guess they get two freebie wins against the Texans. Texans are going to win like two games this year, right?
This is why I don't know why the Texans drafted a quarterback, because they're probably going to have the number one overall pick next year, and then you're going to be in a spot where you're probably going to end up taking a quarterback of the future at that point in time. Instead, they drafted,
I guess, on the off chance you found Russell Wilson and you start him for a year. You don't have to do it.
Yeah, I'm sure they. I'm sure they loved him so much.
I'm just saying, on the off chance you did it, you would then feel like, you know, you at least took a shot at it, right?
David Mills.
Like, I don't think that's it. That doesn't sound like a guy who's gonna go out there and crush it for you. But still,
it was. I mean, that was a surprising pick, no question, from the Texans. And then they, I think, later in the draft, the Texans ended up trading up to get, was it a wide receiver?
Yep,
their draft made. Their draft didn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, zero sense. Not a lot of sense. It made zero sense at all. Which, I mean, pretty much sums up the Texans organization for what, the better part of 5 years now? Ever since they took Deshaun Watson and made the correct decision there, have they made a correct one since? I don't think so.
No. Bill O'Brien at this point, do you think Bill O'Brien's just sitting back and like, I'm actually, he's probably, you think he's almost thankful at this point in time he's not part of the equation anymore? With now, this includes like the Watson crap that's happened.
He was definitely part of the problem, but he's on Saban now, right? Yeah,
he's on Saban's staff.
Yeah, he'll be like LSU's head football coach in like 3 years. You know how this works. Like Sarkisian, you just like keep getting gigs.
Bill O'Brien was good at Penn State.
Yeah, he might be good for college. He just wasn't good in the pros. Don't ask him to like a roster build. Ask him to recruit, where you can have, you know, multiples at multiple positions that allows you the flexibility to, I don't know, move things around a little bit, at least on that end. The point is, no other division can threaten them. Like, you're worried about the number one seed, and that's fair. What I think would happen as Aaron Rodgers ended up in the AFC is the number one seed would just be between, like, four teams. Because I think there'd be enough competition in all those divisions to kind of, like, do battle back and forth on it.
The odds are out from Action Network on who could be the week one starting quarterbacks. We talked last week about who do we think will be. So these are the actual odds. So Cam Newton is -400 to be the Patriots starting quarterback. Week one, Mac Jones is +500.
Feels right.
Andy Dalton, -167 to be the Bears starting quarterback.
Be a mistake by the Bears.
And Justin Fields is +160. I mean, that's not, those odds, it's not entirely unlikely that Justin Fields isn't that guy. And then for the 49ers, Garoppolo, -305 to be their starter. That's a heavy favorite. Those all make sense. I think you still would have to say Andy Dalton's the favorite to be week one starting quarterback.
They're the stupidest for doing it. Like, the other two make sense, right? Start with Cam and then move over to Mac Jones once you get him comfortable. Start with Jimmy Garoppolo until he gets hurt and then switch to Trey Lance. And but like, if your job's on the line, like we very well know it is for both those guys in Chicago, why the hell would you not start Justin Fields week one? You're just going to lose your job. And I get it. You'd be like, well, maybe we can get to like 3-3. Remember when they got to like, they were like 4-5-2 or 4-2, and then they benched Mitch Trubisky? And then they lost a bunch of games, and then they put Trubisky back in. It was awkward as hell. They're going to make that mistake again. They're just going to look just as bad on that end. This is why I'm just glad Kansas City and the Chiefs don't have to worry about these things anymore, Gold. just live in this happy little bubble where they start one quarterback who's the best in the NFL, let Andy Reid handle it, maybe an occasional blip on the, you know, timeout radar, and then you just move on with your life.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what role as well. Perhaps one of their newest picks, Noah Gray, could have. Noah Gray, the Chiefs rookie tight end drafted in the fifth round. He's expected to join us here in the next minute or so, and we'll talk to him about maybe what those conversations were like and throughout the draft process. And I remember the Chiefs, I know Brett Veach said they, as far as trading up, how many different times they thought about maybe trading up to get Noah Gray out of Duke. Ultimately, he ends up in Kansas City and played quarterback in high school, as a matter of fact. So we're expected to have Noah join us here in just a little bit.
Quarterback in high school is impressive. But a lot of those guys did, right? I've seen Travis Kelce throw a ball down the field. He's probably never going to get another chance to throw one. You know that, right?
That's what you get one shot.
Well, he's had two. Because he threw the incompletion last year when he missed Mahomes in the end zone, but he actually threw a pick against the Giants on a ball he took a deep shot on, like across the field. Honestly, the ball looked pretty good in the air, but it turns out NFL defender, and the guy was kind of open when he threw it, right? Like he was standing kind of near himself, but the ball was 40 yards down the field. And NFL players are really fast, so it turns out, Gold. So it's about windows. And I think in that case, Travis Kelce throws that ball in high school. That dude definitely scores a touchdown. Travis Kelce throws that ball in the NFL, and it was a relatively easy interception, as I recall, in that case. But, hey, look, we can ask Noah Gray. Maybe he's got some interest in the possibility of catching or, throwing a ball. They like to work in trick plays for guys. Maybe the whole high school quarterback thing will eventually work in his direction. That's what I know. I know you take a chance. You take a chance, Gold, with trick plays. But you got to, earn it, don't you? Chris Jones still hasn't gotten one. Every time we have Chris Jones on, we're like, when are you finally going to get a trick play? They just never give him the opportunity.
All right, let's go right out to the 610 hotline and talk to the Chiefs' fifth-round draft pick, rookie tight end Noah Gray out of Duke. Noah, good to have you on the show, man. I imagine, has things settled down yet for you on the phone from Saturday? I'm guessing you had quite a few texts and phone calls coming through.
Things are doing a lot better now, a lot more settled, and been able to respond to the people that have reached out and I care about. So it's been good, man.
How are those calls, I guess, at least from your end? They send those little videos out. No, we get a look at you talking to Andy or talking to Eric Bieniemy. How long do those calls actually last, I guess? And what's the scene like after when you finish them up with those guys?
It's just a couple minutes. They just kind of pass you around a little bit to kind of introduce themselves and kind of let you know that they took you. And and I guess in the moment it's a little surreal. You're kind of just trying to take it in, just kind of listen. You don't really know what to say. For me, I was just grateful. It was the most grateful 2 minutes that I've had in my life. So it was good. And then you kind of just the phone hangs up, and then it kind of just hits you after you get off the call with them. So it's definitely a really surreal moment. It was really quick, but in the moment I just I wasn't really thinking about a whole lot.
The Chiefs had said, they said they had two different trade opportunities to trade up for you. And I know it always varies on level of interest, but I guess how confident were you the Chiefs were one of the teams that were interested in your services? They say they had two trade ups to get you. They must have had quite a bit of interest, I would think, Noah.
Yeah, I'm not really sure on their end. I was just going through my process throughout the spring, talking to teams, but I really didn't know the level of interest of anyone, honestly. I was just going through it, just kind of doing my part, and then everything else was going to take care of itself. I didn't know what they were saying or thinking kind of in their front office and between their coaches. I'm grateful that the Chiefs took me and they traded up for me. But, prior to that, I really had no idea of the level of interest that they had in me. And, I just got taken, ready to roll now.
Now, you grew up in Massachusetts area. So was it Gronk for you when you grew up watching Gronk? Were you a Patriots fan then?
Yeah, I was an all-Boston. I loved all the big tradition up there. So Gronk was definitely the guy for me as I grew up playing sports. I played a bunch of different positions, down to certain guys on the teams. Obviously Tom Brady's great, Randy Moss playing, Wes Welker. There's a lot of guys that played there, and I love basketball too. So I saw Paul Pierce and KG and when the big three came in. So, you know, all those guys and all those sports teams is kind of what I grew up on, and that kind of, you know, competitiveness and really sports first kind of atmosphere. And I was just really fortunate to be a part of that. You know, everyone in that area loves sports, loves all sports, and it was just good. You know, when Gronk came to the Patriots, it was a lot of fun watching him play. And, you know, when you're just screaming Gronk at the screen every time he scores and makes a big catch. So it was definitely a unique experience having, you know, guys like that growing up to look up to, especially as an athlete.
We're talking to Chiefs rookie tight end Noah Gray. You mentioned you're a big basketball guy, and you brought up the Celtics there. Now, you went to Duke, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe maybe you were there around the same time Zion's 1 year at Duke. Did you have any interaction with him? Did you go to some of the Duke basketball games?
Yeah, I've been to a couple of Duke basketball games. I didn't really ever talk to Zion. I don't think I've ever had a conversation with him. But, I mean, I've, like, seen him out and about, you know, doing different things. Duke's a really small campus, so you see a lot of different people there as opposed to some of those bigger schools where, you know, your fourth year in, you might have never seen, you know, one person in your life. You know, but he seemed like a really humbling guy, a really, really good guy. And, you know, we went to Duke together even though we never talked. You know, I wish him nothing but the best. I know, you know, he's balling right now. You know, I'm extremely happy for him, especially since he came to Duke, man.
I'll warn you now, by the way, you said you're a big basketball fan. Obviously, you follow the Duke basketball team. There is a hoop inside the Chiefs locker room, and they have a rather competitive game. So I hope that you are prepared. Patrick's not allowed to play anymore, but I hope you're prepared to at least try to compete in that. Do you think you'll hold your own?
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, I played basketball in high school. I played basketball growing up. Honestly, I thought I was going to be a basketball player until I maxed out at 6'4", and I didn't have handles like a guard. So that was kind of a little tough. You know, so, and football just kind of came that obvious choice for me. But yeah, I mean, I didn't know that they had a basketball in the locker room, but I definitely think I could, man.
So Noah, you're obviously a great athlete, to go to Duke and now to be drafted to the NFL, but you mentioned in high school, you played some quarterback as well. Did you think at one point in time that quarterback was going to be the position? We know tight end was clearly a good choice for you. You got drafted, but did you think quarterback at one point was really maybe the path for you?
Honestly, I didn't even really know. I was kind of high school football. We didn't really have another quarterback. That's why my head coach in high school put me there. And, you know, I'm just a, you know, team first kind of guy, love playing football. Coach wanted me to put me at quarterback, and I was going to play it, you know, and that's what I was going to have fun doing. So, you know, I didn't really know that I was going to go to college as a quarterback. I didn't have any clue that I was going to go to college. You know, I think at that moment, I was just playing football and just kind of enjoying it because, you know, it is a kid's game at the end of the day. And regardless if they put me on the offensive line or, you know, defensive secondary, I was going to enjoy playing it. So I think, you know, I found out that I was going to play tight end, like, going into my senior year really late in college because that was kind of, you know, I kind of saw myself and what I kind of like to do is, you know, catch passes and block guys. And but I think earlier in my high school career, I was just kind of doing what the team needed me to do and just had fun playing the game, man.
I think it ends up being kind of like these interviews sometimes, no, because, like, we're trying to look up information on you. What's he do? What are his hobbies? And sometimes those things can be hard to come back. We learned last year Clyde Edwards-Helaire was into classic cars. What are your hobbies? Like, Kansas City likes to get to know you. What do you like to do in your free time?
I love being around people. I love golf. I love going to the beach. I love doing, you know, anything with any group of people, meeting new people. You know, I consider myself kind of like an extrovert of trying new things and being around people in the process. Golf is something I picked up my kind of freshman, sophomore year in college, and I just love, you know, going out with a group of guys and playing, just having a good time. Sometimes even like going by myself because it's kind of peaceful. It's a good change up from football. You know, football is just so fast and crazy. So sometimes I just go out and play golf by myself and just kind of, you know, let everything sink in and just kind of clear my head. But, you know, going to the beach with a group of guys, you know, going hiking, you know, going to different rope swings. I did that a lot when I was in North Carolina, you know, go to different, you know, cliff jumps or rope swings with friends and just do different things like that. So, you know, very outdoorsy, very kind of people, you know, oriented, and you just kind of having fun with that. It's kind of, you know, what I've kind of run on the past, you know, 4 years and even when I was in high school, and don't think I'll ever change from that. So, and I think those are definitely some things I'm extremely interested in outside of the football.
Somebody else, Noah, sent me a link who said maybe it was you. It was Noah Gray, and it was somebody rapping. Was that you? Do you rap?
No, I don't. it would be pretty horrendous, and people would turn seconds into it. rapping, so I definitely don't got that kind of time.
We can work on it. I mean, you know, look, I've gotten better.
Noah, at least you know your rapping potential, and maybe it's not great. My co-host here, Cody, he raps every once in a while on the show, and he hasn't picked up on the fact that it's not very good.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I respect it. I don't have a problem with it, man. If you like doing it, then, you know, go crazy, bro. But I got to be real with myself, you know. I think if I start rapping around my friends, I get knocked in the back of my head real quick because they just be like, dude, shoot it to the pros, man. It's just horrendous.
Speaking here with fifth-round draft pick rookie tight end Noah Gray, I got to ask, we mentioned Gronk. You're going to be training behind one of the best tight ends in the NFL, Travis Kelce. Has he reached out to you yet?
He just sent me a text afterward, just kind of congratulating me, just ready to work, you know. So it was, I was very appreciative. It was really cool. I mean, seems like a great guy, you know, which, you know, is going to lead to being a great mentor and kind of leader. So I'm just excited to, you know, be able to learn from him. I think I'm in the best situation possible, if I'm being completely honest, you know, coming in as a rookie. I think, you know, maybe some guys might think, you know, it'd be awesome to go to a team with, you know, not a whole lot of, like a solidified tight end, you know, so that they can kind of squeeze in and get a lot of playing time right away. But I think for me, like going to a team with a guy like Kelce is great for me. You know, I get to learn from one of the best tight ends in the league. I get to contribute in whatever way that the coaches see fit, and still maintain that kind of learning environment. You know, he's a great guy. That's what I think through my conversations with people that I know him through. So I'm just excited. I'm excited to work there and to really just pick his brain and just get to work, man.
Well, Noah, congrats on getting drafted, man, and welcome to KC, and I'm sure we'll have you on and catch up down the road here and enjoy the training camp and adjusting to KC.
Yeah, I appreciate that, guys. I'm excited to get there. I appreciate you guys having me on.
For sure. That's Chiefs fifth-round draft pick rookie tight end Noah Gray out of Duke. The text line, and I heard it as well, he sounds like Danny Duffy.
Ooh, maybe a little, yeah.
Sounds a little bit like
Danny
Duffy.
Sounds like kind of a chill dude, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sounded like someone thought we were talking to Danny Duffy.
We are not. We were talking to Noah Gray, the Chiefs fifth-round tight end.
Especially when he's talking about the beach and everything. It did. Like, you put it together, we'll have to
maybe
mash it together.
Maybe he can find a friend. We're going to make them friends? I'm going to set you up with a friend date with Danny Duffy, Noah Gray, because it seems like you guys, Danny Duffy also likes being outdoors. So there you go. I don't know if he's like swinging on ropes or whatever, but I know he likes being outside. So maybe this is kind of a fit.
Thanks to Noah Gray for joining us here on Cody and Gold. Coming up next, we'll get to what's trending, and we will talk some more about the Royals who need to get out of this little losing streak.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.